They're going to kill him. He knows they're going to kill him. But why don't they go in? You can't figure out why don't they go ahead and kill him? They've taken away his power to resist. He has agreed not to resist anymore. But why don't they just go ahead and kill him? And then, as the story develops, and this is very, very interesting, the story develops that finally, his mind breaks down because this God that he has treated, they make it so clear that his existence is at the total mercy of the state. And he finds, not only does he fear Big Brother and respect Big Brother as the state, the ever-watching state, but and here's the kicker, that finally he is reduced to where he feels that he actually loves Big Brother. Big Brother must assume the full, Big Brother must be in the fullest sense God. And only then, when he loves Big Brother, will they kill him. Don't you see, he must give total, absolute allegiance to the state, which is not simple obedience, but love. Worship, in fact. Now this is communism. And you need to understand it. But you need to understand it because you need to know this, that there is a system of government which now controls almost half the world, which is gaining on the other half, which says that it is utterly impossible for people like you and me to exist. We simply cannot exist. We are contaminated. We are the common, we are the enemy. Capitalism, that's a firm, they don't care about capitalism. Communism is not an economic system. It's a religion. And they can accept capitalism, but they cannot accept religious absolutism. Yeah. Oh, well, I could do a bit in my library and file in a minute. It's not...
Socialism would be a good one to read about the background.
Yeah, Solzhenitsyn, you can read some of Buffy's writings. Just read their own material. read Lenin. Well, what I'm approaching, and we'll just have to pick this up again Wednesday, is that if I'm correct on this, what you have with communism is Satan, is the worship of Satan personified by, or represented by, a state system for the first time since the fall of the Roman Empire. A theory of government which makes Christianity impossible. And it's not, it's the first time since the fall of Rome. An absolute state. Which can permit an absolute God. Does it make sense to you? Well, we'll just kind of suspend your thinking on it. We'll continue with it.
When did the state actually take the stand, the Russian state actually take the stand against the church?
When the Bolsheviks took over the revolution. Lenin took over the revolution.
Would that be about...
Lenin Trotsky took over the Bolshevik revolution.
About 1917?
The interpretation think it's altogether possible that I could be wrong.
I'm lying to you.
I know it's hard for you to imagine. Interpreting this and its heavy dependence upon its contextual and historical setting, on its context and its historical setting. I believe what we're seeing here is the promise, so let's summarize now, bring down to the end, is a promise being made to the doubting or wondering or perplexed Christians of the first century who see a great trial coming upon them as we read Revelation 1. What's going to happen? I see this in the context of the fact that Jesus had said the gospel was going to go into all the world, and it had done that by the time the book of Revelation was written, by the way, by the time Paul the Colossian letter, he said that the gospel had preached in the whole creation. It looked as if, and what the early church expected, now listen to me, when we saw this again, what the early church expected, and perhaps what the apostles expected, was for the gospel to go through the whole world in one generation, as it did, and for it to go on and for it to continue to spread in great victory, and the culmination of that victory being the second coming of Christ. Remember, I point out at the beginning of the course that it's very clear from the scriptures and from early Christian literature that the church taught, the early church understood that Jesus, they thought Jesus was going to come in their generation. Paul thought that. You do not find any looking forward. It is only the book of Revelation, by the way, that you find any hint that you're looking from the first century. You're looking down through long years. Even in the one qualifying section of 2 Thessalonians, the man of sin, man of lawlessness, Paul says it's already starting. And I'm convinced that Paul must convince himself that it would be soon. By that I mean in terms of decades, not in terms of centuries. Already starting, he said. Yes?
I'm just wondering, in the third chapter of 2 Peter, could he be hinting, could the Holy Spirit be hinting by Peter that perhaps it won't be for a while when he says that with the Lord a day is a thousand years and a thousand years?
No. That's no kind of point. That's simply a very figurative statement, simply saying that God does not count time the way we do. As we say, it's been a long time. What? In other words, he's answering the argument in Peter. It was, because he has not come, he will not come. And it's interesting. The scoffers were saying, where is the promise of his coming? Now, does that not reflect, Bruce, the fact, does not suggest to you the fact that the scoffers have been listening to the Christians? Mm-hmm. What have the Christians been saying?
Well, he goes on to say, it doesn't look like speaking tonight.
Yeah, he's going to come soon. Now think of that. The scoffers, why would the scoffers, in the little bit past the midway point in the first century, say, oh, you've been saying he's coming, where is he? How much more would they say now? You see my point? It indicated that the early Christians were saying, he is going to come in our generation. He's going to come soon. They thought that. They had not been told that, but they thought that. They had not been told anything for the time, except that they were going to come like a thief. And you have this one qualifying thing, which was Holy Spirit gave in the Thessalonian letter to put down hysteria in Thessalonica. And that was, they'll not come until the man of sin is revealed. But that was not a sign of his coming. Paul said it's already beginning. It's not going to be right then. And the sin is first come. And then, I think in Revelation 20, we have the first indication that the church can look forward to a long, indefinite period of time before the Lord comes. Christians were saying, back to the original point, the early church thought this way, as I understand it, that the gospel is going to spread, continue to spread, in a generation or so, and when it's done with the whole world, everybody's heard, then the Lord will come back. But what had happened? Well, the gospel had spread, which had happened, and now, all of a sudden, the forces of the gospel are being rolled back. The state has become concerned about the church. The state has outlawed the church. The state has said we're going to wipe out the church. And they say, what in the world's going on here? What happened to our victory? It's not all we expected. You mean the Lord is going to allow this kind of thing to happen? And the book of Revelation answers that kind of thinking as I understand it. That makes sense? Well, you see it, I think. So this is shortly going to come to pass. And so in Revelation 20, he says, even though many are going to die in this struggle, they still have immediate victory, immediate blessing. I saw the souls in this vision. You see the souls themselves. You see the thing itself. So a vision of it. It's a symbolic representation of it. A symbolic presentation of it. I saw the souls of those who are beheaded for the testimony. They're with Christ for this long indefinite period of time, 1,000 years. And Satan is going to be bound, as a matter of fact. Satan seems to be loosing himself being represented by the Roman state, but he's going to be limited. He's going to be able to do that. He's going to deceive the nations forever, for most of this long indefinite period of time. But at the end of this period, he's going to be loose for a little season. Now, if the preaching of the gospel bound Satan, what loses him?
The binding of the gospel. Removing the gospel.
Yes. By the way, you see, historically, it is only in the 19th century, early 19th century, well, I'm sorry, that's the job, late 18th century, that you find the gospel itself being broadly questioned as to its validity and veracity. That is, it was abandoned and twisted and ignored, but it was never denied as being that Christianity was true systematically until the late 1800s. It's not broadly. Some did in the Renaissance, but it was not a broad affirmation. And but now when you have, by the way, what you have today is Satan has succeeded in all kinds of ways in stilling or quieting the voice of the gospel. He did it from the right and from the left. He's done it from the left by, I'm just giving this an interpretation of history. He's done it from the left by what we would call negative criticism. Neo-orthodoxy, liberalism, modernism, the whole bit. That is, that the gospel is human in origin, at least in some ways. Okay? Well, that takes the sting out of the gospel. Usually a social gospel, usually a humanistic gospel. On the right, he has done it through subjectivism. That is, he has substituted, he has successfully, in broad areas of that which calls itself the church, he has successfully substituted human testimony for the gospel. The gospel is not what the Bible says, but the gospel is what I feel. Subjectivism, the gospel is the idea that the gospel is whatever you want it to be. Individualism. Everybody goes into business for himself. Every man has his own Bible. So that I don't mean to be unkind, but very frankly, if you take the majority of our churches next Sunday across the nation, the vast majority, there will be about a little gospel preached from all the hours spent in the pulpit you could possibly imagine. By gospel, I mean the actual exegetical expository teaching of what God actually said. There'll be a lot of religion talk, a lot of God talk, a lot of moralisms, a lot of stories, a lot of opinions. Very, very little gospel. Now, I would be critical, but I am critical of that. I'm critical of preaching. I love preaching. The greatest tragedy in the world that if so many preachers are not willing to pay the price to preach the gospel, so they should do something else and preach something. Like the gospel, a little bit of gospel. You know, in other words, listen to me, fellows. The fact there's a little bit of gospel, a little bit of Bible in your preaching, doesn't make it a Bible sermon. Well, regardless of what I was about in that direction, if the preaching of the gospel bound Satan, the loosing of the gospel, the loosing of Satan comes about by the absence of gospel preaching. Now, one of the things this permits is it permits Satan, to understand it now, to be loosed in the sense that he was bound and to have influence. He's always had influence down through you. He's never been absent. But to have a special kind of influence, a special kind of influence in terms of which he was bound in the early centuries. And this is what my point I was making yesterday, and that is that once again we see an international communism or scientific socialism. We see Satan's kingdom being represented by officially and the church being illegal. See, it's one thing to have an immoral state. All states have always been immoral by and large. But to have an atheistic state in which Christianity becomes philosophically antagonistic, Christianity becomes impossible, like we're seeing this on a worldwide basis, stated, religion is the opiate of the people. Christianity is not true. Not only is it not true, it's dangerous. And for instance, in Russia, it's illegal for a parent to teach their child about Christ. Yes?
Didn't we see this before the Reformation, the same thing, when the gospel wasn't preached?
Well, we saw it, but what you had in many states was Roman Catholic countries preventing Protestants from preaching, and the Protestant countries, in some cases, him and Roman Catholic preacher, but they agree that Christ was the Son of God. They didn't agree on the terms of salvation. Yes, true, in the sense that I was talking before, but at least Christianity, they were defending Christianity as they saw it. The same thing, say. They were doing it illogically, perhaps, and immorally, but the basic concept of Christianity was there. But to take a communism, it isn't. Like it's anti-Christian, legally, technically, philosophically. It has to be. Yeah.
Well, we're saying that this language here, when it talks about how the state will be loosed, that it's not that God's going to loose him with different authority, but that it's going to, this is like a prophecy of what's going to happen because of the preaching of the song.
Yes. Doesn't say God loosed him because of you. You don't read that in books. It says he is bound, then he says he is loose. In this vision, Satan is let loose. Say God let him loose.
It wouldn't be a total removal of the gospel preaching.
Oh, no. Just as Satan's binding was not a total silencing of Satan. Well, by the way, if you think, I think that sounds very reasonable to me. I think it sounds very far-fetched, and I get my opinion, to say that Christ is here on the millennium. He comes and he puts Satan in a prison and keeps him there for 1,000 years. And then for some dumb reason, when it gets almost to the end, he lets him out again so he can send more people to hell. And can you imagine, here's Christ when he comes to Jerusalem. And one day he says, okay, it's time for Satan to get out. I think it's time for us to have some more trouble here on earth. And he lets Satan out and he sees the nation for a short period of time. And then he conquers him again, holds him in a lake of fire. That doesn't make sense to me at all. And the Bible doesn't say God loosed him, as I pointed out. It does not say, it says that Christ, the angel, bound him. Yes?
I'm wondering, so would you say the agency of the loosing would be man's own rejection of
the nature of the thing, I think. It's him loosed. And perhaps we are seeing, for instance, I think we see this in our culture, I think we're seeing a higher and higher instance of demon possession in our society than we've ever seen. Maybe not. We're difficult to know that. But I'm convinced of this. I think Satan is picking up steam.
This theory ruins the fun of the comic book idea of the beast and all the other theories that are around today, when you point this to the gospel, that the loosing and the binding of the gospel, that ruins a lot of the heyday.
Yeah. It's kind of sober. I mean, it's not very
right.
Well, what happens? He'll come out, verse 8, and deceive the nations, I take it, the way he deceived them before his binding. Gog and Magog, we'll talk about that later, Ezekiel 38, together for the war. So I'll simply say about Gog and Magog here, this is traditional apocalyptic language indicating that he is going to use nations as his agents. This is the Old Testament formula. Got that? Understand, Gog and Magog simply means that Satan is not going to do it directly only, he's also going to do it indirectly, that nations, that peoples, are going to be his agency in this attack of the saints. And they came upon and gathered together for the war. The number of them is like the sand of the seashore. That is, I think he's talking about literal war here. Somebody's talking about the fact that the church is going to face great numbers. By the way, it's going to be outnumbered badly. And they came up on the broad plain of the earth, indicating this is a worldwide thing, involving the whole world, and surrounded the camp of the saints and the beloved city, the church, as I understand it. Hebrews talked about this. You have come to Zion. The saints are who? Jewish saints? They say that. And the beloved city, and fire came down from heaven and devoured them. That is the final judgment. Now notice, he's not saying the thing itself, he's saying a vision of it. We're not going to understand, I don't think the judgment is going to come in fire, it's going to come when the Lord returns. But in this vision, it's represented by the fact that the fire comes down and destroys them all. And then you have the judgment, the final of dealing with earth and with Satan, verses 10 and following. And the devil who deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are also, and they will be tormented day and night forever and ever. And I saw a great white throne, he who sat upon it, from whose presence earth and heaven fled away, and no place was found for them. And I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne. The books were open. Another book was open, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged from the things which were written in the books according to their deeds. The sea gave up the dead which were in it, and death and Hades gave up the dead which were in them. Now, again, when it says sea, keep in mind, you're talking about books and judgment. He's not seeing the judgment itself. Keep coming back to this. You've got to make a fundamental decision to look at Revelation. Is he seeing the thing itself, or is he seeing a symbolic presentation of it? He's not seeing the thing itself. He's not seeing the judgment. He's seeing a vision, a symbolic presentation of the judgment. I do not think there will be literal books. I don't think God needs a set of books. I just don't think what you want about that. Difference. When it says the seed of the dead, he's not talking about all those who drowned. I often hear this, you know, all those people who drowned in the sea. What does the sea mean in apocalyptic language? It means humanity. Find Daniel, find Revelation. The beast rises from the sea, indicating he comes from the mass of humanity. And the world and its population. When it says, by the way, the word sea, we ought to give it a consistent application. When it says the sea of the dead which are in it, he's continuing with this vision. Let's go back to the last few. In the book of Revelation. I think he's talking about the general, I think what he's seeing is a presentation of the general resurrection. All the dead on earth were raised. The sea of the dead. And those, death and Hades give up their dead.
Back earlier when we were talking about the martyrs and those the first resurrection, because they didn't actually die, but they can live forever. You know, we're talking about the physical death, we're talking about the other dead. And in verse 5, it talks about those who are lost. Here in these verses, we take them to death to refer to those who are lost also?
Well, sort of, I don't think it has to be particularized. All you have is a visionary or a symbolic presentation of the general resurrection. And everybody's called up. All of humanity. He said, the sea of the dead which are in it. I think he's talking about the general resurrection of all humanity in the world. In other words, the sea, the apocalyptic language means the general population of the world, on the world, in the world. Now, so they all come, verse 13. And death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire. This is the second death, the lake of fire. And if anyone's name was not found in the book of life, he was thrown in the lake of fire. That's very simple. Interesting, the commenting on this, see, look at chapter 21. And I saw the new heaven and the new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. What do you mean, no longer any sea? In our interpretation of what that meant, in the new heaven and the new earth, there's going to be any vast oceans. That's what he's saying. This is, he's not saying that, again, he's not saying the thing itself in Revelation 21. This cube he sees, the Holy Spirit is a cube. Obviously, it's a symbolic discussion of the church based upon Ezekiel's temple. But he saw the new heaven and the new earth, there was no more sea. In the vision, but not in reality. In the vision, the sea represents what? Well, that is the earth, and its people were gone. This earth with all its people and things going on as they've always gone on is gone. No more sea. Well, that's another point, but very confusing to read the book of Revelation. As I say, one of the fundamental mistakes, yes, let me ask you a question.
How do you arrive at the sea?
Well, in fact, the Daniel the beast rises out of the sea. This is commonly, I think one of the, I should have mentioned before that a longer discussion, but this is commonly admitted among Bible scholars. That's not a real controversial issue. Sort of used that way in Daniel and Revelation. Keep in mind, again, in the book of Revelation, that let me give you sort of two little pointers in interpreting this kind of literature. And when you get this in the course of Revelation, it's not my job to teach that. But you see, keep in mind that he is, in the book of Revelation, he is seeing signs, that's the word used, symbols. He is not seeing the thing itself. He did not see the judgment itself. This is not a picture of the judgment. This is a symbolic picture of the judgment. This is not the judgment itself, you see. The new heavens and new earth, the eternal bliss of the believer. This is, he's seeing a vision. He's seeing a sign of it. And, secondly, it's hard, very difficult to keep that in mind. It says there was no more sea. Well, what does that mean? We're not talking about the presence or absence of water. He's talking about the fact the world is gone. Forever. It's gone for good. Yes.
I've heard so often that he saw the actual thing and then described it in the only picture of language he could think of.
Well, it doesn't say that, though.
I know.
He signified it, it says. We already studied it. We already read this. Verse 1. Communicated it, the word for signified it. The language of signs, not the thing itself. You see this in Revelation 21. Y'all, I've heard many show Revelation 21 as a picture of heaven. It is not. It is a picture of the glory of the church in symbolic language. By the way, I think it's a picture pretty about a cube. You know, the beautiful city and so forth. I've read books that elaborately calculated how much hay you put in it. How many people you could put in it? Ever heard ever terms like this? So many people are put in it? That's very silly, in my opinion. They exaggerate dimensions in form of hyperbole to indicate the signal is. We're not talking about the thing itself. It's a sign, a symbol. Well, I've already talked about this before, but it's very confusing, and we sort of keep reminding ourselves of that. He was not saying the thing itself. Never did. You saw a vision of it. You have a chain, you have a thousand years, you have the language of binding, you have the language of the camp of the saints. Literally a camp. I mean, is the church going to be picked out here, you know, a church camp somewhere?
Like the Lord.
Tommy? Are we to think, for, you know, I often hear the literalists and the hyperliteralists say, well, take it literally, what it says, a thousand years means a thousand years. Oh, well now, are all the Christians in the final day going to be gathered in one city? Walkers are going to go to Jerusalem. I'll be there. And even those who take it, this will be the Jews, the Jewish saints. And if all the Jews gathered in Jerusalem, you couldn't get standing shoulder to shoulder. You couldn't get all the Jews in Jerusalem. You packed them like cordwood. There are more Jews, by the way, in New York City than are in Palestine today. Palestine is not the Jews. I was laughed at. That's a lot of about when the Russians are going to come against the Jews. That's absolutely, because if they go against Palestine, that's utterly absurd. There's only about probably less than 0.1% of all the Jews in the world in Palestine. We've got many Jews in Florida. We've got Palestine, I'm sure. Probably more. A number of major cities have more Jews than all around Palestine. And they don't even know who's a Jew anyway. They have a real problem handing out passports, taking out passports, so they can't figure out who's a Jew they live. Sammy Davis Jr., he's a Jew? He's a Jew. Says he is. The fact is, a Jew is anybody who says he is. And we have a problem. Well, anyway, my point is, if you get the literalizing, you should get broke. It's not, it's very wrong to do that. And again, as I suggested before, the common way that's handled by amateurs and professionals who ought to know better, is they simply go through the book of Revelation, as I've already said, and make it literal if it's possible to be literal. And then everything, I then fall back on the figurative where it's impossible, which denies the essential statement of the book about its own character and nature. Well, so if I've dealt legitimately with Revelation 20, underline the word yet, but it's very difficult, and I'm off for this is the last word of the subject, Christy.
You said you're going to give us 2 pointers to interpret.
Well, the first one was, you sing the vision itself. Okay, so I think the second one is that because it is the nature of apocalyptic literature that you get into it is such that you get into trouble if you try to particularize the interpretation. That is to have every detail in it, every object in it, every event in the vision have a particular, isolated, special interpretation. Not so. It's like a parable. Parables. Everything in it doesn't have a particularized, specialized interpretation. Many elements in a parable simply contribute to the general picture. They are necessary elements in the picture, just as some things are necessary elements in the vision. Doesn't mean they have a particular interpretation. I mean, like they take the parable of the man who sowed the seed. Well, the man, he has an interpretation. And these are very particularized parables. Some of them aren't even close to being that. But you don't find, that was seed bag, that's, what does that mean? Bible. Seed, the word of God. And, creepers of the angels and their sickles are rotten. Not down there. Good. Particularized out. And you cannot go through the book of Revelation. Every detail, find a particular interpretation for it. It doesn't work that way. Like, you get to this, for instance, in Daniel, they probably, the 10 toes of the image. It doesn't even say it has 10 toes. 10 nation common markers of 10 toes. Well, let's see. That's what, what's his navel? It doesn't say it has it, but they have 10 toes, either. Really, you start particularizing it. You try to interpret the arm. And, well, you get my point. Some are simply contribute to the picture, the vision, the necessary elements. Okay. Now, if I have dealt legitimately with this, what we see is the early church being told that even though many are going to die in this struggle, Satan is not going to carry out his program. He's not going to eradicate the church. As a matter of fact, Satan's system itself is going to go out of business. It's going to be banned. This is going to continue for a long, indefinite period of time. And then, I think this was written for our benefit. The book of Revelation, as I said, does look down into eternity, but it does look from the perspective of the early century, perhaps the first century. And I think it's written for our benefit. That shortly, the shortly, and what shortly means, I would not mention, it's not a sign. That comparatively, relatively, toward the end of this period, he is going to once again be able to do, because of the absence of gospel preaching, the weakening of gospel preaching, this is going to loose him, just as the preaching of the gospel bound him. And he's going to be able to do the kind of thing he did before, and that is set up a state system, be able to use the nations in an official capacity, and outlaw Christianity again. It's never been done, it's not been done, not generally. And then the end will come. But again, this is not a sign. For instance, this is not a sign of the immediate return. What I teach is that there are no signs of the immediate return of the Lord. There's nothing you can see that you can say, well, we know he's coming for the next few years. For instance, I'm sitting here in America reading Revelation 20 with this interpretation, and it kind of looks distant to me. Why? Well, we're still pretty safe, aren't we? Now, if I've been one of these Christians whose parents have been in a concentration camp for 30 years in Russia, I'd say, well, it's a good pastime. It all depends on your viewpoint. So, but certainly not a sign. The question is, what we tend to think is, well, now, God will let it go on until American Christians are surrounded, are being put to death, arrested. Well, that's very chauvinistic, isn't it? I don't think God cares any more for American Christians than he does for Russian Christians or Chinese Christians or Vietnamese Christians. But you, I think that. It may be, however, America may be involved. I'm speculating. It may be. And I sort of get this as a general picture from the vision in Revelation 20, recorded in Revelation 20. It may be that Satan will be allowed to do this until the last outpost of preaching is being assailed. Now, and that will probably be America, simply because America falls back on the tradition to be a Christianity more than other nations, and it seems that, for instance, well, the exception of, well, as a matter of fact, the only thing that's keeping communism from taking America now is America. Nobody else is protecting America. No, no, no. That is, we're not for America, American military system. Europe would be gone by now. South America is going rapidly. Asia is pretty much gone. But Australia, Australia never was an age to anything. You got the point that there's no other nation protecting America. America's doing all the protecting. We have, that is, let's just face it. Our freedom to preach the gospel is defended by American weaponry. You know, whether we choose that or not, whether we like that or not, that's a fact. And, well, it may be that this is the last outpost. But again, that's not a sign, because the question is, what amounts to an assault? Yeah. But see, the thing about it is, and one of the reasons this won't be that this is not a sign any more than that. You see, the man of sin coming first is not a sign. Because you had the pagans except the 6th century. Probably. That was fulfilled, some would say, before then. Well, that didn't bother. The man of sin must come first. We've been here for 1,000 years. That's certainly no sign. And if, and again, I'm speculating, this is pure speculation. If what we see in Revelation 20, underline the word if, is the last outpost of the gospel, or that kind of thing, then the question again arises, well, what constitutes an assault upon the saints? Direct military assault? Well, that's not going to happen. Sort of a general persecution, going and arresting everybody? Well, it may be, but in my opinion, if I understand I know about on this subject, Christians will not have the, I don't think I've mentioned this before in this class, Christians, in my opinion, in America, if it comes to that, will not have the luxury of having it known that we are suffering for the right. Because Christianity will not be treated as a crime in America. It will be treated as a mental illness. And that's already beginning. Christianity is a form of maladjustment. Therefore, a Christian is not a criminal to be punished. He is a sick person to be treated. Which sort of takes the edge off of it. You know, I think one of them has the privilege of dying in the door. Take Polycarp, you know, it's very clear. Yeah, he's out there in the middle of the arena. It was very clear. I think we're going to have that luxury. I think that Satan has become more sophisticated. What's been Russia, by the way? Russia, the official view is not that Christianity is not that this is Christianity. But belief in Christianity is an abnormality. So you don't send them to jail, you send them to mental institutions where they're treated for drugs. Of course, destroyed that way. I think that'd be worse than dying. I think that's what's going to happen. For instance, the laws are already on the books in some states. You know, in most states, that if you murder somebody, they're going to put you in jail for so long. But if they consider you mentally ill, they can keep you forever. It's called indeterminate sentences. You know that? I'm sure not. It's true. I'm sure. You go out and just lay in wait and cold-blooded murder somebody, and you get a life sentence. I mean, or it's second-degree murder, you get 30 years. They're going to put you in jail for that. You'll be probated. All you have to do is to be judged mentally ill. Or you can be judged to have somebody put away from you mentally ill. They keep you until you're well. In determinate sentence. So, for instance, in California, I know, if you second degree murder is about 30 years, 25 years. But mental illness would be a life sentence. They judge you maladjusted. Well, you see, the modern secular party in psychology already judges Christianity as being a maladjustment. And what I'm saying is that maybe this surrounding of the last outpost, if that's what we're seeing, it may not be as, you know, clear, open, right and wrong, good and bad, black and white battle. It may not be decisive. I think it's going to be very subtle and misleading, gradual, and misunderstood. And I think it will take a great deal of maturity for Christians to understand what's going on and to remain faithful. See, if somebody comes to you, your front door, and says, okay, like Brother King was preaching, he was, you know, were you still in the picture or not? Very clear decision.